This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang. We go to Moscow. The report from the New York Times about the meeting between the two leaders of the two adversaries of NATO and the United States, according to the NATO meeting of some months past. Moscow, New York Times. Vladimir Putin of Russia and his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping sought to project a sense of unity and normalcy during the second day of Mr. Xi's grand state visit, which included the signing of 14 agreements. Those agreements are described by a fellow at the Carnegie Endowment as pretty thin. Those agreements include, oddly, quote, in the field of joint production of television programs. We welcome Teresa Fallon, our colleague in Europe, in Brussels, watching this same meeting. And Teresa, a very good day to you. What is it that you are both surprised by and expected from the very little we hear from the details of their agreements? We see them elaborately signing papers, but to what end, to your understanding? Good day to you.
Good day to you, John. Well, I think that what Putin really wanted was more support for the war in Ukraine. There's growing evidence of China supporting Russia with drone sales, jamming equipment, navigation equipment through careful study of trade figures. So the media really hasn't been paying enough attention to that. And I think that that's pretty important. I call this trip the peace wash visit because, like greenwashing, pretending that someone, a company is more green, this is more like pretending that she is really a peace mediator. I think it was more of a kabuki theater. It was a nice cover for him to visit. Xi Jinping's visit to Putin came right shortly after, just days after the International Criminal Court announced that Putin was being accused of war crimes, and specifically in the abduction of 16,000 children from Ukraine to Russia. So the fact that now he's becoming more of an international pariah, Xi Jinping saw no problem going to visit him. He's the first leader to visit him. And Putin needs China clearly more than Russia. I mean, Russia needs China more than China needs Russia. And the other thing that I really think he wanted, and the Chinese were not willing to ink on these thin gruel agreements, was the power of Siberia 2. This would be a gas pipeline that would tap into some of the gas that would have been sold to Europe. And Putin has lost the markets in Europe for gas. So he needs China to buy this gas. But I think they're very good negotiators, and Beijing is holding out for a bigger offer, perhaps access to Arctic bases or more high-tech equipment that Russia in the past has refused to sell to China, for example, to update Chinese nuclear-armed submarines. So these are the two things I think are on the Chinese wish list, but Putin didn't really get what he wanted. He got some optics, he got some international media coverage, and I think that this meeting also really drove a wedge in the world. So we see a bifurcation between the liberalism and those who are against the world order or the current world order, and illiberalism. The fact that Xi Jinping is kind of calling Putin his best friend at a time when there is a warrant for his arrest for war crimes, I think says a lot. You know, as children, we're told by our parents, birds of a feather flock together. So I think that Putin and Xi toasting each other with white wine in Moscow speaks volumes, while Prime Minister of Japan Kishida was in Bucha witnessing where war crimes had taken place in Ukraine.
Gordon, what did or did not surprise you about this meeting's event and the announcements?
I think that, as Teresa said, we didn't see substantive agreements I would have expected a little bit more because they've been planning this meeting for a very long time. So that, I suppose, was the surprise. The non-surprise is Putin's need for Xi Jinping and just Xi Jinping making it very clear that China and Russia form a new coalition, as Teresa was talking about. So really, the world is dividing, and the Biden administration and others in the West don't want to see that.
Gordon, you have a question for the director of the Center for Russia, Europe, and Asian Studies, Teresa Fallon.
Ms. Director, as Xi Jinping was leaving Putin on the concluding the third day of talks in Moscow, the Chinese leader said something like, changes are now occurring that we have not seen in 100 years. And Xi Jinping also said, we, referring to China and Russia, are driving the changes. How do you think those words are going to be heard in Brussels?
I think that Brussels has some misplaced hope. We saw back in March, a year ago, the High Representative Joseph Borrell said the only mediator for peace in Ukraine will be China. And so he was really promoting this idea of China as a peace broker. We saw Olaf Scholz, the Chancellor of Germany, fly to Beijing and with a whole bevy of business people on a plane with him. And his main deliverable was that Xi Jinping said that he would use his influence with Putin not to use nuclear weapons. But if we look at the documents quite carefully, there's no mention of that. So the Chinese are no longer even stating that that they would ask the Russians not to use nuclear weapons. In fact, it was kind of promoted with Putin discouraging the British to use spent uranium shells in Ukraine, that was escalating to a nuclear level. So I think that in Europe, we see quite clearly with the Central Eastern European member states, they are very they're telling the rest of Europe, we told you so, that the Russia and China were closely aligned, and that this idea of French leader Macron wants to go to Beijing to talk about peace and China's proposed peace plan. I think that it will be very difficult now for Macron to sell that to Europe. Nevertheless, this message is sticky because I was at a conference yesterday, and one of the questions from an audience member was, why are we being so hard on China now? We need them to broker peace in Ukraine. So this kind of propaganda machine has worked on public opinion in Europe in some areas, people who are not so well informed. So I'm glad that you're getting this story out. And I think that we've seen in Europe, Olaf Scholz, Annalena Baerbock, the German foreign minister, Joseph Borrell, there are several leaders who have really advocated for China to be a peace broker. And I think that this meeting really proves that they are not, that they're using the same rhetoric of Russia in regard to Ukraine. They did not call for a ceasefire. They're not even advocating not the use of nuclear weapons. So I think this meeting, it was really a smokescreen. It was a convenient excuse for the interim. Everyone was kind of speculating, what will China do? And, you know, they haven't even accepted a phone call in over a year from President Zelensky of Ukraine. So I don't really feel that they are a proper mediator. But maybe the changes, as you referred to, Gordon, in 100 years will boomerang on Russia. Russia is weaker than they've ever been in 100 years. They are more reliant on China, and they are clearly the little brother to China's big brother. So I think that this is a big change in the international order. And I think that these words might be seen by historians as rather cryptic in the future.
Teresa, the CNBC, the Business Report, reports mixed results for tentative allies. Do you agree with that? We just have a few seconds.
Mixed results for tentative allies. I mean, of course, China never wants to say they have allies. China is hard power, just interested in their own selfish interests. So they need Russia in the tent. If there is ever a war with the United States, they need Russia to be with them, not against them. They share a huge border, and they will Right. cooperate with Russia in any way they can. So despite all of the optics, Russia will stay. China needs Russia in their tent just for their own geostrategic interests. And
Teresa Fallon, director of the Center for Russia, Europe, and Asia Studies, Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Bash.
Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.